Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday. Remember the 5th of November, the Gunpowder Treason and Plot. Only this is Anno Domini 2016, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, not the blues, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. But before we do the news, let me thank each and every one of you.
Absolutely.
We made our goal this year. I am super excited and super delighted. Exactly. Thanks to each and every one of you. To those of you who donated, thank you so, so much for assuring that we stay on the air for another 6 months. We're very excited about this. And for those of you who did not donate, well, now you can listen guilt-free and freeload like every other illegal immigrant. All right. On Monday, Google's threat analysis group disclosed a critical vulnerability in Windows in a public post on the company's security blog. The bug itself is very specific, allowing attackers to escape from security sandboxes through a flaw in the Win32K system. But it's serious enough to be categorized as critical, and according to Google, it's being actively exploited. As a result, Google went public just 10 days after the report, after reporting the bug to Microsoft before a patch could be coded and deployed. The result is that while Google has already deployed a fix to protect Chrome users, Windows itself is still vulnerable, and now everybody knows it. Google's disclosure provides only a general description of the bug, giving users enough information to recognize a possible attack without making it too easy for criminals to replicate. Exploiting the bug also depends on a separate exploit in Adobe Flash. Why are we still using Adobe Flash?
I don't know.
But there is a patch for that still. Simply knowing that the bug exists will likely spur a lot of criminals to look for a viable way to exploit it against computers that have not yet updated Flash. Microsoft harshly criticized the disclosure.
No kidding.
You think? Today's disclosure by Google puts customers at potential risk, a Microsoft spokesperson said. We recommend customers use Windows 10 and the Microsoft Edge browser for the best protection.
Really? Microsoft recommends using Windows and Edge?
I was shocked when I read that. Huh. And could hardly speak when I read it.
And Google decided not to go to Microsoft, but just to release.
No, they went to Microsoft in 10 days ago.
10 days. Okay.
So and they said this is a critical, currently being exploited flaw.
Right.
You need to fix it, and they've had a policy for years that says if it's a non-exploited flaw,
right,
then you get a month.
Okay.
If it's an exploited flaw, you need to get on it. And 10 days is a reasonable amount of time.
Google has made this number of days calculation?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Google going by Google's numbers to tell Microsoft how quickly they should be patching their stuff.
Yeah, and they went to them and said, here's your vulnerability, which you did not know about.
Yeah.
And you've got 10 days to fix it. Now,
or else we're going to tell everybody.
Or we're going to make it public. Absolutely.
Right.
Well, here's the thing. Google has enough programmers to know they can fix pretty much any problem in 10 days.
Okay.
Theoretically, Microsoft has more.
Programmers?
Yeah.
Okay.
So 10 days should not be a difficult amount of time.
Well,
it truly should not, maybe, according to Google. Right?
Yeah, well, Google's making assumptions about Microsoft's code base and how quickly it could be patched.
Yes. But yes, Google, they are.
As far as I know, Google doesn't know precisely what's inside Microsoft's code base. So they're making an assumption about how easy it is to do something.
Right. But what they're saying is this is currently being exploited. People are currently having information of theirs stolen.
Right.
You need to fix this right away.
In the Win32K. Now, is that system still present in the Windows 10?
Oh, yeah. There's a whole lot of Windows that's not 64-bit.
Okay.
And still runs at 32-bits. One of the reasons Windows is so slow it is, because you know that the way the 64-bit chips work nowadays is that most of them, at least, if you go from a 64-bit to a 32-bit operation or the other way around, what it does is it has to save the entire 64-bit environment. Load up a 32-bit environment.
Oh, spin that up.
Right. Okay. Run the code. This is internal to the chip.
Right.
And then put it away and run the 64, load the 64-bit and run it again.
Okay.
That slows things down. Now, when most of the subsystem is still 32 bits, that happens a lot under the hood, which is why Windows is not faster than it is.
Okay.
One of the many reasons.
But then the spokesperson saying that using Windows 10 and Microsoft Edge for, quote, the best protection, does that ring true to you?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just to make sure we're on the same page there.
No, not in the least. No. Not even a little bit. No.
Okay.
Anyway, the brief grace period is in accordance with policy Google put in place in 2013, allowing critical vulnerabilities to be disclosed only 7 days after they're reported to the vendor. They waited 10 because they know Microsoft's codebase can't be...
Long weekend there.
Yeah, right. At the same time, a number of researchers did criticize the policy as overly harsh, arguing that 7 days is not enough time to properly respond to a complex vulnerability. This is the first major invocation of the policy in the 3 years since it was put into place, although Google's engineers defended it as necessary, giving the active exploitation of the bug. We encourage users to verify that auto updaters have already updated Flash, and to manually update if not, Google's post recommends, and to apply Windows patches from Microsoft when they become available. So, our poll of the week. That's soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Is Google discloses major Windows bug? And your choices are good for them. They shouldn't have done it so soon. This is a bad idea. How horrible of Google. And you're still using Windows? So far, good for them is ahead with 14 votes, followed closely by you're still using Windows for 13 votes. And, of course, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. A second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first item under the poll discussions is 5 November 16. Google discloses major Windows bug. So once you've found that and you can put your information in there, of course, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
We should mention that the stream, you know, the live video is not up because Steve Ray's not here.
Right. Steve's not here, but the audio stream is up.
Yep.
Audio,
that's true.
Yep. Is up and it's going nicely. And, of course, we're here. We're here live. But, yeah, so that's the deal. Microsoft generally gives 7 days. They waited 10. They normally give 7 days for actively exploited vulnerabilities. And part of it, I think, is Google is a little frustrated with Microsoft.
Do you think?
Because, well, but Microsoft waits months sometimes. Sometimes there are vulnerabilities that are 3 years old.
Well, they don't do it. I believe Microsoft will sit on anything as long as they can. If they can go fly under the radar and it's not, you know, something major earth-shattering, they'd rather focus on other things and say the heck with the user.
Right.
So what if your system's getting hacked or whatever? Unless it's really bad, they're not going to worry about it. It's just like their Defender program. I'm sorry. That's, you know, it's a nice program, and that's about all I'll give it. It's a nice program. Does it keep you up to date? Heck no.
Not very well.
That is not their specialty, like we've said right along. You know, when you get into some of these other programs that Microsoft brings out, and you know, you get into it, and they don't really support it other than their operating system and their Office package.
Right.
Anything else is fluff.
Yep. Or some other F word.
Yeah, but
fluff is good.
I love.
We'll stick with fluff.
Yeah.
Fluff.
So yeah, but yes, and I understand. I understand. It's not just Google's frustration. Pretty much everybody's frustrated.
Yeah, they're just vocal enough,
like
and they've
that,
got enough
you know?
Clout that they can voice their opinion, and people listen.
When there are flaws that were closed recently that have a 3-year-old or 5-year-old date on them,
that's ridiculous.
That's far too much. That's far too much for the user to have to deal with. And then people wonder, well, how did I get a virus? Well, you're using Windows.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There's no better answer than that.
Well, like I said, I've had a couple folks come in and say, well, I'm using Defender. I was told that's good. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
I says, they don't update it. You can go to either Super Anti-Spyware or Malware Bytes And they're updating it sometimes daily.
Sometimes twice a day.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the super anti-spy will run in the background protecting you all the time. And it will let you know in the bottom corner that it's got an update. Yo, I find that annoying. Well, then fine. Ignore it. Get infected. And then you got to bring it to me to clean it out.
Yep.
I don't have a problem with that. Go right ahead. Yes, I encourage that.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, look, I don't, if I did any sort of repair work and fixing stuff like that, I would tell you absolutely ignore it.
Yeah.
Because then it would be money for me.
Because you need a new boat.
I need a new boat. Exactly. I need a boat.
No, right. He wants a new Chromebook.
I want the new Chromebook.
Yeah, he wants a new Chromebook.
I did get a new toy today, though.
What's that
right at?
I got, last night I got a Google Home.
Oh, yeah, I saw your post about that.
Yeah.
Okay,
I love
so
it.
Tell me more.
I love it. I love it.
Is this the
it's the Alexa.
Alexa, yeah. But by Google?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
which
what
means.
What do you got it doing so far?
Everything. So far, I've
been telling them jokes.
It'll tell jokes. It'll do here. All that stuff. But so, for example, last night I could say things like, hey, Google, play the Wonder Woman trailer on my TV.
Okay.
And poof, up it comes and,
cool.
And plays it on the TV. I at one point I said, play Jazz 901.
Okay.
And it did. And this morning I said, play XXI. WXXI, and I played that, and I could say, this morning I said, because I know it did this, and I wanted to see what happened, I came in the room, I sat down, I said, hey, Google, good morning. And it said, good morning, Nick. The weather is blah, blah, blah. The temperature is blah, blah, blah. Today's weather is blah, 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 blah.
Neat.
And here's the news, and it played NPR News.
Wow.
I was kind of amazing, and you know, I can ask it what's my day like, what are my next appointments, set this, change that, give me this,
right?
You know, so most of the things that you can do with Google in general, for example, that you can do with your Google phone, you can do here.
Okay,
there are a couple things it doesn't do yet. For example, I said send a message to a friend of mine. It said I can't do messages yet.
Okay.
And Google said that. They said, we haven't, you know, we're going to be adding stuff as time goes on. And, of course, the first thing I did when I unpacked it, and this, by the way, is the first version of it. I ordered it the day after it came out. The first thing it did is update.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Does it also control, like, your smart light bulbs or
all of
like
that? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you need to have one of those and then some type of Google device plugged into the back of your TV?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a, it's a Chromecast.
Okay. A Chromecast.
Mine's a Nexus player, but it's, you know, any sort of Chromecast will do that.
What do those run, dollar-wise?
$35 okay. For the real Chromecast. The one I got was $60 or $70 because it does other things as well.
Right. So that plugs into your HDMI on the back of your TV.
Yep.
And then it gets its power from a USB?
Yes.
Okay.
That's yes.
Probably also on your TV.
Right. Right.
Got
it. So, for yes,
one.
For the TV downstairs, I have my old Chromecast, which is exactly the same functionality as my new Chromecast.
Uh-huh.
So what? The old Chromecast is plugged into one of the HDMIs, and then there's just a short little plug that I got with it.
Uh-huh.
That goes to the
USB
port that's right next to it.
Okay.
The dirty little secret is that on almost every television, all the USB ports are powered.
Okay.
On almost every television.
Oh, but not necessarily.
Not necessarily ever, but I won.
But you win this time.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. So yeah. So I can do. In fact, I can see both TVs. So if I wanted to, I could suddenly start playing something on the TV downstairs and pork off my wife.
I did that as a trick. My parents got me one of those smart light bulbs that also has a couple of speakers in it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So you can pair it to your Bluetooth. So I put it in my daughter's room. And she's got one of those lamps that has like five different goosenecks on it, all going to different bridges. So I turned that on.
So hit it in there.
I hit it in there. And then I could pick anything to play, you know.
Nice.
And that could be, you know, miscellaneous animals.
Yep, yep.
Crooning at the moon.
That's funny. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, sound bites on the truly great and gratefully member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Brian from Pavilion, New York on the line. Welcome, Brian. What's up?
Gentlemen.
Who came in? Oh, us.
Oh. I think we did.
I set you up for that one.
You did. Thank you.
2 weeks ago, I called in about a serious keyboard issue where I was getting nulls at login. I don't expect you to remember that.
I don't. Sorry.
That's fine. Yeah, yes. But actually, I wanted to call with the highly technical and completely intense solution for it.
Okay, what is it?
Let's go. I changed the batteries.
Batteries.
Yes. I didn't mean to tease you guys with that problem. I know it was epic. But, and,
the 2000, the 21st century equivalent of checking the plug.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it was plugged in, so I got past that.
You got past that, but you needed to change the batteries. That's funny. Well, it's common, but we don't think about it. You know, once we put batteries, who thinks of batteries in those things?
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, yeah. Well, you actually said, well, check for the simple things first. We plugged in a regular keyboard, and it worked just perfectly fine. And then, you know, this was an Alienworks computer, you know, quite an expensive unit. And it's like, okay, well, we can't part with the keyboard. So what are we going to do about it?
Fix right.
You know, so after about 3 or 4 hours of looking at Google and, you know, teasing away, calling Sound Bites, well, let's just put some batteries in it.
Wow.
The sun came up.
Hey. The sun came up, exactly. So now, of course, you just need to put a thing in your calendar that says change the batteries of the keyboard. Oh, and by the way, the mouse.
Yeah.
Oh, there's batteries in that too. Jeepers. Okay.
Jeepers.
Yeah, both.
If it doesn't have a cord, it's got batteries.
Yeah. And batteries not included.
Right.
Thanks again, man.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, I've got a mouse at work. It's Apple's current mouse that it doesn't have a cord, and it doesn't take batteries.
Wow.
It has a rechargeable battery in it.
Yeah.
And you have to take your cord, your lightning cable that you might get with the mouse or with your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
You plug it into the USB, and then you charge your battery. So, if I'm getting up to go fill up my water bottle or do something else, I'll charge it up. And if you hit it there for about 3 minutes, it lasts for weeks.
Nice.
By itself.
Huh.
It's really impressive. And when I first heard about it, I said, all right, so I've got to flip this thing over and plug in a thing to charge it up. This sounds ridiculous. But
right.
It has been remarkably useful. So I've been very impressed with it.
Nice.
It's nice to see that. They're doing the same thing with their wireless keyboards now, too. You charge them up for just a couple of minutes, and then they're good for weeks and weeks.
Fast charge has come a long way.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
even my new Google phone,
And
you can hook it up, charge it for, 15 minutes, and it will get you up to 75%.
Wow. And the chips inside now are so much more efficient than they ever used to be.
Right.
The first generation of RF stuff or Bluetooth stuff, boy, they just really chewed through the batteries.
And that's one thing I'm liking so far with the new Google phone is the battery life is fantastic. On the average, when I get home at night, usually I have at least 65 to 70% still available on my phone.
Wow.
Yeah, whatever they did is good. Like I was telling Nick before, the one thing is the Google phone is just that, just the Google phone.
For those of you who don't know, Dave now has a Pixel XL. We can no longer call him Boom Boom Enright.
Or Light My Fire.
You're right.
Yeah, that, Note 7 is history. But no, this phone, they didn't get to add the bloatware. Like so many of the phones you get, you know, the companies, whether it's AT&T, Verizon, they all put their own bloatware in and they throw in all these other packages in there.
That's all the only way they think they can differentiate themselves from the other carrier is by what they include.
And they get money from many companies
for
doing that.
Well, the Google phone is literally bare. It just has the Google, you know, calendar, the contacts, and
the actual phone itself.
The email, right. Yeah. On it.
And everything else is available in the Play Store.
Everything else I had to bring down and make a list, but there's only the apps on there are the ones that I wanted.
Right. Uh-huh.
Along with Google Chrome. And it's working great. I love it.
Okay. Good for you.
So
good for you.
You'd recommend that if possible for people to go with.
Yeah, right now, I mean,
with no
Samsung is having their issues. Matter of fact, they just had them on the news again.
Washing machines?
Yeah.
The washing machines.
Yeah, the washing machines.
Can't get a break this
Poor
year,
Samsung.
Man.
Not only that, now their dryers.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, their dryers just started catching on fire.
Yep.
My parents have had one of those for a long time. I don't
The older ones have a different.
The older ones must
I
be
personally
different.
Think it's got something to do with the battery connections.
Oh.
They changed something. They actually said one of the things we're. They said one of the things we think it could be is that the batteries are being compressed because now phones are so thin,
sure.
et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The phones are being compressed. The batteries are being compressed and shorting out.
Okay.
Well, if that were true, it would certainly be happening with Apple.
Yep.
Although Apples aren't as thin as Samsung, so maybe.
Well, the phones, I bet they're pretty close.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they aren't, but
it does happen.
I heard rumors, so it's because they've been farming some of this stuff out.
Well, that's what I think it is. It's either the battery manufacturer is bad, and somebody else was saying that it from the preliminary tests, it could be the connection, the charger connection.
Hmm.
Yeah, because the new Note 7, once they updated the new battery, there were only three incidences of anything happening with those. Three. And the only severe one was the one on the airplane.
That airplane.
Of course, that's the one that canceled everything.
Well, exactly. The other two, when that happens, you're done.
The other two were very minor. They just got warm.
Yep.
But that was enough that they said, nope, can't allow this. Boom, they wound up recalling it, mainly because of that one.
Yep. I had a friend who was very worried about her Samsung phone. It's a Galaxy S5, the same one I have.
Uh-huh.
And she said, it gets warm. I said, yeah, when they charge, they get a little warm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Any
but they're not too
does.
Warm to hold. And they're certainly not so warm that they're going to set themselves on fire.
No. Matter of fact, during the winter, it's kind of nice.
It's kind of nice.
Let it charge and put it in your back pocket.
Buy a second one and put them in your
warm
shoes.
Your butt.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Wow. Warm up your butt. Or use it as a hand warmer.
Hand warmer. Yeah, there you go.
Put it in one mitten or then switch it over to the other one.
Well, yep. Just buy two.
Yeah.
Just buy two. Why not? But yeah, so those things are not, I think, in general, the phones themselves are not bad.
No.
It is likely to be the battery. Might be the charger, but it's more likely to be the battery itself.
Well, like you say, once I got the replacement on that Note 7,
yep.
I had no issues with it. None whatsoever. It worked fine. Didn't overheat. Nothing. So
that tells me it's the battery.
Yeah.
That right there.
It's just that.
That's how it works.
You know, just a small percentage.
Right.
But it was enough to cause an issue, you know, the second time around, just that one major one with the airplane. That's it, yank it. And what, they're out 2.5 million phones. And like you say, they have to send out
billions of dollars.
Yes, and they have to send special boxes to ship them back. Because you can't put them.
We were talking about that.
Yeah, you can't ship it back.
Yeah, none of the carriers will take them.
They won't
without being in the special.
And it's got to be turned off.
Things. Yeah.
And they won't put it in an airplane to ship it either. So.
Nope, right. No, it's got to go ground.
Right.
All right.
And it all comes down to the fact that it's a non-changeable battery.
Yep.
You know, everybody's following Apple's lead. That saves you a half a penny a phone. And when you're selling millions and millions and millions of phones, I get that a half a penny is a lot of money.
Sure.
But even so, had that been a replaceable battery, the whole thing would have been
in, out,
done.
Would have been done at your local
Yeah, they could have easily,
shop.
No, they could have mailed them out.
They could have sent everybody two batteries.
Yeah,
sure. And a gift card.
Yeah.
And a gift card. I used to have, on a very old phone that I had a second battery and a charger.
Okay.
So I could, and I was, making a lot of phone calls and using a lot of data because Verizon was unlimited data in those days.
Right.
Because of that, I would lose my charge by, late in the afternoon.
Sure.
I'm out of battery. But by having the second battery, which I could charge overnight in the little charger, I could just carry a second battery with me, boom, 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 change it out, done.
Yeah.
And now I've got a whole bunch more stuff available to me. So my phone just made a beep because I've dropped it enough times now that every once in a while it just beeps all by itself. I don't know what it thinks it's doing.
Now, Nick, you've got green light at home, right?
I do. Okay. And I love it.
And I don't have it yet.
And I love that as well.
Bite me. I want it in my neighborhood.
So let me ask you this. What kinds of speeds are you getting with green light at your house?
I am paying for 100 megabits per second.
Okay.
And I am getting 107.
Up and down?
Up, no, 100 down, 20 up.
Okay.
And I'm getting 107 down, about 21-ish up. So now that's your mileage may vary.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the router that you've got connected to this
yeah.
is probably something that has a fairly decent inbound and outbound.
It'll do gigabit. I'm not paying for gigabit.
All right. So it'll do gigabit.
Right.
Your router will.
The Greenlight router will.
Okay.
And then my router will.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, internally, my network is gigabit.
Okay.
I'm just not paying for gigabit.
So what would you recommend as a router these days, especially for somebody who might have a house where some parts of it are kind of spread out compared to other parts?
Well.
Deep subject, shallow minds.
Shallow minds, exactly right. Here's the thing. There's a new router from Google.
Okay.
It is a wireless router.
All right.
And you can buy multiples and create a mesh network.
Is this the Eero, or is that a different,
you know,
different
it's,
one?
Yeah.
As we all reach for our laptops and figure this out. Google Wi-Fi router.
Yep, there it is.
Google Wi-Fi.
Google Wi-Fi, the home mesh Wi-Fi system.
Okay.
My connection was interrupted.
I've got something here.
Okay, yeah, now I do too. And there it is. It's a little hockey puck.
Okay.
A little double hockey puck.
So you buy multiples of these and then you set them throughout your house?
Yes.
And they all mesh together?
Yes.
And then one of them at some point needs to be connected to your internet feed?
Yes, one of them will be connected to your internet feed. And that will be obviously with an Ethernet connection.
Okay.
And the others, they still need a power adapter. We're not actually Star Trek yet.
Sure.
But other than that, there's some sort of broadband internet connection that you have to have, and of course you want either an Android or an iOS device to do the setup with.
Right.
That's the way this worked. I have there's a program called Google Home that's for your phone.
Right.
Both iOS and Android.
All right. So here's the problem.
Okay.
You cannot get one of these yet. You can join the wait list.
Right, there is a wait list.
But you can't run out to your local electronics shop and pick one up.
No, you cannot.
All right, so of the things that are currently available to be purchased, that I can take my dollars and turn it into stuff, what would you have?
A repeater?
Well, yeah, what I would get is...
If you had your green light at home and you knew you needed fast inbound and outbound stuff, and you had a house, maybe a ranch house that was kind of spread out,
I'm still a fan of although many people are not, I'm still a fan of Cisco.
Okay.
Now,
they're Cisco Netgear or Cisco Linksys
well,
now?
So, okay. You could buy Linksys or you could buy straight Cisco.
Okay.
And you can get a gigabit router. What happens is I've got green light coming into a little box, which goes to my Cisco wireless router, which is gigabit.
Okay.
To a switch, which is gigabit.
All right.
So that I can plug in the 700 or 800 devices that I have Ethernet. Not, and in addition to the 300 or 400 edition, things
devices
that I have that are wireless.
Sure.
So I went Cisco. I went direct Cisco. But again, whether you go Cisco or their local subsidiary, which I think you're right, is Linksys.
That might be their consumer end.
The consumer end, exactly.
So what I'm noticing is I was shopping around. I've got a person I'm going to go see this weekend who just got green light and wants to have great Wi-Fi in his house. So I said, what should I do? Obviously, I should come in and ask Nick what's going on, just like everybody else does. And I was looking around at consumer-based routers, and man, you can spend quite a bit of money. You can easily spend $300 on a top-end consumer router.
Yeah, mine was a third that.
Okay.
Oh, actually, I think it was $130, I think, is what I paid for mine.
And they've got all sorts of antennas. They look like a spider that's been flipped upside down. It's just got a bunch of antennas that go in the air.
Yeah.
And they look really fantastic, but...
The one issue with mine is that it doesn't reach far enough into the backyard.
So that's where you would need the repeaters.
That's where you need
a
repeater
on the porch.
Yeah.
I'm trying to decide whether I want to buy a repeater or I want to buy several of these Google hockey pucks.
Yeah. Have they talked about how much those pucks are going to be?
No. Yes, they did. I just don't know what it is.
Okay.
Because
it seems like a good idea. There are a few, at least one other company, the Eero.
$129 a piece.
A piece. Okay. So if you get a pair of them, then you're at,
three of them for $300.
Okay. So a three pack for $300.
Yeah.
And you
covers up to 4,500 square feet, that which is my house and the front yard and
the neighbors.
Right. That's pretty good.
And the neighbors and everybody else.
Just send them a bill.
Exactly. Well, if you have, WEP 2 or something on there,
sure.
WPA 2 rather, you're in good shape. So, that sort of thing. It's got 2 gigabit Ethernets.
Yeah.
So one goes to green light, one goes to my router.
Right.
And I'm on my way.
Okay. That's a great thing. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, it's my pleasure. All right, if you want to give us a call, you can either apparently drive down to the studio, or you can give us a call at 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, Nick Francesco, you 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Still. And we were discussing the pros and cons of whatever... Linksys and Netgear and Cisco
and Lincoln. Everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody's got a router these days.
Everybody's got a router.
Prices are all over, so do your homework. I just went to smallnetbuilder.com to check out their router ranker.
So, Nick, for the router ranker.
Yeah.
On that one Cisco router that you do have.
Yeah.
Now, does that pretty well broadcast just about throughout the whole house? Because I know your house is like mine. It's... from 1928, and there's wire in the walls.
Yeah, your house is a puppy compared to mine, frankly.
Yosh.
Well, we've got a whole wall that's curved, so there's chicken wire in it, and I can't get a signal through that. It's a Faraday cage, which means you can't sit in the library and get a signal.
Yes, with your smoking jacket.
With your smoking jacket. But, there are books, which is really the, if you got to make a choice, take the book. The one thing my wife can't do is get a signal... Because she likes Pandora, Comedy, Laughly, that stuff. Mm-hmm. And she can't get a signal in the far backyard when she's doing potting and things like that. Okay. So you can get it sitting on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get it quite out to the street. I can get it into the backyard. I can certainly get it in my driveway, which is why, I have WPA2 on everything so that it's secure. But the fact is that if you've got a repeater, if I could get a repeater that I could, the problem is it would have to be outside somewhere.
No, not necessarily. If you got it on a back wall, an outlet on the back wall.
Well, I'm 20 feet from the back wall where my router actually is. Hmm. So, but of course there's a metal shelving unit in the way. So maybe.
Yeah.
Just stick a repeater
just to get
in the back window.
Even if it's over upstairs in another part of the house, that it'll broadcast out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's, 360.
Right. But anyway, but I'll tell you, that router, which was not an expensive router,
it works good.
It's great. With everything that I'm doing, it works terrific.
Well, if I ever get green light, now I know what type of router to get.
Well, I look very closely at those Google Home routers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you get the 3-pack, it's $300, which sounds like a lot. But now you've got 3 of them, which you can mesh together to do your whole house. Put one in the middle upstairs. Put one just inside your front door. Put one just inside your back door.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to have it out in the garage. You're going to have it out on the front lawn when you're sitting with the dogs. Mm-hmm. You've got it everywhere you need it.
True. Yeah.
You don't even have to worry anymore.
My Wi-Fi right now, I have a Linksys router. And that does do pretty good. I mean, I can get it upstairs, and, the signal's pretty good up there, even out to the front porch, because it's right in the center of the house.
Yep.
But, could be a little bit better out, upstairs. So that's why I was thinking of getting the booster.
Yep.
But I'm going to wait and see what happens, as far as changing some things around that.
Well, it says according to the Google Wi-Fi, the 1-pack covers up to about 1,500 square feet, and the 3-pack will cover up to 4,500 square feet. Well, duh.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stick one 1,500 feet from the first one, you get another 1,500 feet in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that depends on what's in that 1,500 feet, too.
Right.
If you've got nothing but thick steel, there's no amount of wiggling electrons through the... electromagnetic spectrum
that's going to
go through that. Everything's making a shadow, and you've got to make sure that
when that you're, is true.
You're not in that shadow.
Right. But it becomes what it becomes is a mesh network. So each system is on the same network and works great. That's what a repeater actually is, mm-hmm. a mesh network. And they're very, very cool. There was a thing called the OLPC, One Laptop Per Child.
Oh, yeah, Nick Negroponte's mm-hmm. project.
I have one.
From, what, 15 years ago now?
Yep. I have one. I haven't turned it on in a good 10, 12 years.
Yeah,
it was one of those deals, unlike buy one, get two, this was buy two, get one.
Okay. Yes, right? Because one was being donated.
Right. I got one, and one got donated to a village somewhere. And that was a mesh network. So what it would do is you would boot it up, and it would look for a Wi-Fi signal, and it would also then look for another OLPC.
Uh-huh.
And if, you know, whichever one it found, it would either then become a server of more Wi-Fi on the network,
right,
or and a consumer and then server out to other people. And they call that a mesh network because you can think of it as a net, right? You may not be able to see the router, but you can see another computer on the router,
uh-huh.
and so that one will relay data to you.
Wow. Now, how does your bandwidth get changed when you're on a mesh network? Isn't there a certain amount that's for back channel signaling and monitoring of signal?
Yeah, but it's really minimal.
Okay.
It's really minimal. And particularly, you know, when you're in a lot of those little villages in the middle of nowhere, any internet is better than no internet.
Sure.
So there's a little back channel chatter.
Right.
Who cares?
But with Eero or with this Google Wi-Fi thing,
it's minimal.
Okay.
It's minimal.
Not worried.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Good to know.
Right. Particularly, you know, when you've got 100 megabit or gigabit, you don't care about a little
right.
back channel.
No, it's not
going to mean a thing to anybody. But yeah, the big thing these days, as Dave was saying, he's a cord cutter. Dennis is a cord cutter.
Oh yeah.
I rarely
everything but the Ethernet cord.
Watch the cord. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like I say, I just went green light now. Yep. I'm going to become Nick.
Yeah.
I want green light.
The big thing, though, is one of the things that people are doing now is, speaking of wireless, they're doing wireless mesh networks in cities.
Okay.
And the reason for that is one of the key problems with fiber is the cost to run it.
Absolutely.
You know, running the – it's like with anything.
Mm-hmm.
The first – person to get hooked up costs you $150,000.
Right.
The second one costs you nickel.
Right.
So the basic idea is if you can, using, say, microwave to send signals across the city, right,
mm-hmm.
to a mesh network of wireless receivers, then, and from there, send them out as standard Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then all I have to do is say to you, hey, for you've got a tall building, Mr. Apartment owner.
Mm-hmm.
How about if I give you free Wi-Fi and you let me put one of these on your roof, or I pay you $50 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the kind of deal that the
a lot of places are
cell phone antennas make.
Yeah.
Right. So I do that. And now you've got on a building in town, you've got coverage out to, 1,000 feet, 1,500 feet. And so then you add more of those and more of those and more of those. And suddenly you've got citywide coverage.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-mm.
No.
And they do that. They do that in a number of places. I'd love to see them, frankly, get some Wi-Fi in the public market.
Oh, yeah. That would be nice.
That would be more than nice. It would help the vendors a lot because many of them now are doing Square.
Sure. Yeah. Wireless credit card transactions.
Right.
For people who don't want to have the cash or,
right.
or want to buy more than they've got the cash to do.
Right. But that's a lot convenient. For a lot of those people, for a lot of the vendors, that of course uses their data.
Sure.
And it would be great if they could do it over Wi-Fi, which they could do if the market had Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
But so at any rate, the point there is that we're seeing new technologies come along, and you can do mountaintop to mountaintop with wireless.
If you've got the right antenna.
with you've got the right antenna. And by the way, that antenna can be made with a Pringles can. One of my ex-students did his thesis on that and went from mountaintop to mountaintop with a standard Wi-Fi.
Cantenna.
Exactly right. A Pringles can and some wire. And made it from one mountaintop to another. And right now, one of the fastest connections, in the finance industry is in London. What they've done is instead of using the trans channel cable.
Yeah.
Which is fiber and very fast. They set up a microwave tower.
Okay.
To go across the channel.
Interesting.
Because it's pure line of sight. As long as you can see the other end.
Right.
So you start in a high mountain or building in France, and the White Cliffs of Dover over in England, and bang, you've got it there. And it's something on the order of 2 or 3 milliseconds faster.
Wow.
Which,
that's enough.
When you're talking about the automated financial transactions that people do nowadays, 2 or 3 milliseconds is tens of millions of dollars.
It's definitely worth it. So they're always interested in moving data faster.
So the faster, the better. Exactly right. And microwave is so far in terms of, you know, do you have line of sight and how few hops can you make?
Right.
Right. So the transatlantic cable is inherently slower because it's light speed, but light gets slowed down a little by the glass in the fiber channel.
Sure.
Not a lot, but, you know, milliseconds over the distance of the channel.
Right.
Right. And it gets slowed down by each connection that you have to make. Again, milliseconds.
Right.
So microwave from across the channel is much faster. And then it's fewer hops, fewer relays. Because, again, now you can go line of sight for 150 miles and then line of sight for 150 miles. And instead of 15 connections, you're 4 connections into London.
Yeah.
And so you end up being several milliseconds faster.
Right.
And that's all it takes. And you know, honestly, you folks listening, you're not going to care. You don't care if it takes 15 milliseconds or 20 milliseconds. Humans don't notice that, but computer systems do. And so the faster they can get it, the better. And using that technology to make a more inexpensive connection into, you know, microwave is very expensive. Mm-hmm. To set one up, $100 million, right? But in the long run, it's much cheaper for a wide area to bring in microwave into a mesh network, into a standard setup than it is to do it any other way. You see microwave everywhere on many of the cell towers. You'll see microwave because that's also the way Verizon and Sprint and AT&T get their stuff around.
Right,
that's their back channel. So microwave computing, microwave networking is a big thing already and getting to be bigger at a lower level, let's call it. It used to be the back end. Now it's becoming closer to the front end.
Right.
As things go along. So we're going to see that, I think, become more and more prevalent as time goes on.
Well, the whole thing with, like we were talking before we came on the show, more and more folks are becoming cord cutters. You know, because the prices are going up and up and up, and more channels, like CBS, now they're offering their service that you can buy it monthly, so you can pick and choose.
Right.
You're getting more of the options, where these cable companies that didn't offer the packages, they said, here's what you get, and here's what you'll pay.
Yep.
And you also have to have this box and this and that you got to rent from us. And, you know, same with the dish companies and everything else. They want you in these contracts, and they can raise their prices and do all these other add-ons and everything else. Folks are saying, the heck with this. ABC, CBS, all of them are offering, you know, you can go back and look at old channels and everything else. So more and more, I think that's going to be the trend. More and more folks are going to say, the heck with it. I'll cut the cord and, you know, just get internet service and then do what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way to go.
Right. And you know, people say, well, it's going to, you know, I got to nickel and dimes me. And I tell them, look at your cable bill. look at what you want to buy. What is that going to cost you? You're probably still going to save $50 a month. $50 a month is $500, $600 a year.
Well, for me, I'm going to be saving $65 a month.
Wow. Yeah, multiply that by 12, and you've got a bucket load of cash.
Yeah, over, you know, quite a, over $700.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm not paying anymore. Like I was telling Nick before, you know, it was nice to go to my budget and sit there and remove one item, put in another, and there's a $65 savings, and I'm still getting everything that I had before.
Right.
That's right.
And on both TVs.
You're getting everything you cared about before.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's, yeah.
Right.
That's,
and this is the difference. People say, well, I don't get everything I had. Well, how much of that did you actually care about?
See, that's what I did first. I made a complete list of all the channels that I wanted.
You did some homework.
And did the shopping and looked at the various Hulu and all these others to see which ones would best fit me.
Uh-huh. I'd say to people, make yourself a spreadsheet. What do you actually watch? How often do you actually watch it?
Right.
What would it cost you to get it in a package?
And then how can you do it some other way?
And how can you do it some other way? We're going to take a slightly longer break. It appears you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. You're going to get the opportunity to do it again, of course, but it's going to be after a few minutes. So you have a chance to take a breather, hit the refrigerator or whatever it is you hit during these breaks. And we'll be back with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I do want to once again thank all of those of you who were kind and generous enough to become members of Jazz 90.1 during the recent pledge drive. We made our nut. It's great.
What a nice thing for you to do.
It's great for you to do that. So for all those of you who were generous and kind enough to support this station, thank you so much. And for the rest of you freeloaders, well, here's the rest of the show.
Really.
Right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from East Rochester, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
Hello. I was just I'm going to let you know that there's a DirecTV program that's going to be coming out on the Internet. It's called Direct Now, and they haven't come out with it yet, but you can email them and put your name in for the service. It's called DirecTV Now.
Nice.
Okay. And if you want to be a cord cutter, which is what I am.
Oh, good for you.
That's way to go. But the other question, I texted you, and I don't know if you were able to get that, the one about green lightning, about what kind of equipment I was supposed to put in the apartment, if any, and obviously needing to get the property manager's permission to put it in there.
Okay. I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on television anymore, but here's the deal. The way I think this works is this. If you are in a private home, you can do anything you want. If you're an apartment building, then one of the things that should, I guess, have to happen is you have to read your lease and find out whether or not you can do something like that or they have to do something like that. What I do know is that many apartment buildings, the apartment owner, manager, whatever you call the guy who owns the building, makes a deal with a company like Greenlight for X number of dollars to bring in a gigabit connection. He then distributes that throughout the building to the tenants and then charges them a couple of bucks a month. Right. So let's say it costs him $100 a month and he's got to get gigabit and he's got 10 tenants. Let's make life easy for me.
Sure.
If he charges each of them $10 a month for a gigabit connection, it costs him nothing to bring it in. If he charges them $12 a month, he makes $20 a month profit.
Sure. But
and you still save $88 a month.
Yeah, but it definitely sounds like talking to your management.
It's on us, though, to have to pay for our own connection because we are in need to use time. We need to use Time Warner at this point because we need to use that connection at this point unless something can change.
Right. You would not be able to use the Time Warner connection. So there would have to be something different running a different set of stuff. But, honestly, there's 100 million ways to do it. And without actually seeing what you've got in your building, I can't tell you the best way to do that.
How can you do it without drilling a hole in the wall and causing problems?
Well, it depends. I don't know what equipment you have, but much of it is interchangeable. So it might be possible if you brought in something like Greenlight that they could hook to the point where you would normally hook to Time Warner Cable, and then all the other lines are already in place.
Oh, okay, I see. So then they would have to basically disconnect Time Warner, and I don't think they want to do that.
Well, but again, I don't know what your situation is like. I don't...
Making contact with your property owner is
talk to the property owner about the possibility of something like that. Take a look at what it says you can and cannot do in your lease, and that'll tell you a lot about what your next steps are. I don't have a better answer for you, but...
Now, if somebody wants Time Warner, and they want to keep Time Warner... And somebody else wants Green Lightning. Is that a possibility?
Because anything is possible.
Again, you got to talk to your property owner.
Anything is possible.
Yeah, it's their building.
It depends on how. That would require you now be running two sets of wires, but I don't know if that's possible in your building. I can't speak to that.
The best answer is maybe, unfortunately.
Yeah, the answer is it depends. But yes,
right.
It certainly is possible. And now everything else is people.
Right. Well, right. I have a modem from Time Warner, but is it the same kind of deal that you get?
No, your
like
Time Warner
it's a different it's a different modem.
Right, your Time Warner connection is going to use a coaxial cable.
I understand that.
Right, but it's basically the same deal. They put a router in your home, they connect it to the fiber outside, and from then on, it works just like everything else. Everything else plugs into the router or does wireless, and then that's how you get your connection. But
so it's not connected. So they're not having to drill a hole in the wall then.
Well,
at some point somebody would have to drill a hole somewhere to get that initial fiber connection in. Now, I ran mine through the same set of holes that had already been drilled into my walls for Time Warner.
Well, then that's what could be done if as long as it doesn't do any damage to the property, then it could be done. I just want to double check.
It's certainly possible.
But again,
right?
Okay.
But again,
we are not your lawyer.
You got to check your lease. You got to check your lawyer. Talk to the business, to the apartment owner, and see what their take on all this is. Because, like I said, we're finding that some places the apartment owners are quite amenable to bringing in something like Greenlight because they make a few bucks too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, yeah, if they want to have it for the entire complex. But if a single person wants to have it as their own subscription, then...
Mm-hmm. Right, then it's got to come into your house somehow, whether you can do that through the same connection that Time Warner... The same hole in the wall that Time Warner is currently using, or you have to drill a different hole. I can't answer that.
That would be the best thing, is going through the same connection, because then it would have less wear and tear on the property, and then the property manager would probably be okay with it.
Of course, if the hole's big enough and you can push that, it's a tiny little wire, but you've got to have room to push it in through the hole.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm hoping I didn't waste any time.
No, you were good. That's fine. I'm glad. I'm just frustrated because I can't. I wish I could answer your question, and I can't answer it fully and satisfactorily for
because
you because
we don't know,
every situation is different.
We can't speak for your landlord.
Right. But I'm not frustrated with you. I'm frustrated with the fact that
they listen to this program too, so they'll probably know that I'm talking about that.
There you go. If you're listening, give us a call. We'll chat about it. Thanks.
Right. Have them call.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Bye bye.
Have a good one.
Yeah, it's a tough call because who knows?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it depends entirely on the company with whom you're dealing. Now, again, for many of these organizations, they bring in something like Greenlight, and then instead of a bunch of holes in the wall, they do that mesh wireless thing.
Mm-hmm.
Each floor gets a wireless router of its own.
Yep.
And they're all meshed together, and then they talk to the various buildings, the various apartments on that floor.
Yeah. I believe down what we call the valley. You know, they're
down in the valley.
Down, or they shouldn't say the valley, the Dougway. They call it the Dougway. I don't know how it got the name of the Dougway.
Yeah, some guy named Doug.
Some guy named Doug.
Yeah, dug it out. But down there, they put in all these new senior, they're still building.
Yeah.
All those apartments. And supposedly somebody was saying that they're going to have green light in there.
Neat.
Which would,
time to move, Dave.
Yeah. What's the rent?
No, I like my, still like my house.
Yeah, but yes, certainly if
they're getting closer,
a person who builds an apartment complex is obviously going to look around for the best deal for his or her building.
Absolutely. And they want to have the best competitive offering they can to people who are looking for places to live.
Well, and it works both ways. What's best for them, the owner, and to be competitive nowadays, you want to be able to say, we've got fast wireless for you.
Especially you can get 100 megabits
for 50 bucks.
Sure.
Gigabit.
No, I'm sure
for $100 a month.
Yeah, nobody else can do that.
Right.
I'm sure there's lots of fine print about the ways you're allowed to redistribute that to your tenants, but I imagine you can work through that.
But I'm sure that that's worked through.
Yeah.
That's why they have lawyers.
If I went to Greenlight and said I want to put, I want 2 gigabits, 5 gigabits, 20 gigabits. They have a thing on their site that says if you're an apartment complex, give us a call.
Yeah, sure. And they've
so
got
they're
a
perfectly
few of,
amenable to that.
Oh, they've already got. If you look at their list, because I watch it weekly.
Of course you do.
where they're expanding to and how far they're getting along. I mean, they are really growing.
Yep.
Not fast enough for me. You guys got to come up Emperor Boulevard.
I know.
And to get in that area, you can see in some areas where they are doing apartment complexes.
Yep.
They're offering it in there because, hey, to offer their tenants, like you say, it's an incentive. Oh, we're offering 100 megabit, a gigabit rather, service for, for the $50 or whatever the charge, is if it's buried into the rent.
Right.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, if everybody can get it fairly inexpensively. So I think it was under pricing, and it said something about, contact for special pricing for apartments and businesses.
Okay. There it is.
So they know what they're doing, and they're ready to do it. And that makes all the sense to me. I see there are places who are doing Time Warner, which is very fast and very lovely, and Frontier, which is lovely. But the ability to have that gigabit connection for a specifically small amount of money,
mm-hmm.
you can get the cost. Right. The gigabit for a home, honestly, I have to be completely honest. Even I actually don't need more than 100 megabits.
What?
No.
I didn't say I didn't want more than 100 megabits.
He's justified.
I didn't need more than 100 megabits.
Oh, okay.
But I can get 100 megabits for $50 a month, 500 megabits for $75 a month, or a gigabit for $100 a month. Now, honestly, seriously, how do you say no to that?
Yeah, exactly.
Are the contracts like a 1 year, 2 year contract?
Now, if you get the $50 a month, you pay an installation fee of $100.
Okay.
And same with $75 a month. If you pay the gig, if you go up to the gig, $100 a month.
The big gig?
The big gig and make a 2 month commitment,
okay,
they waive the fee.
Oh, well, why would you not make a 2 month commitment?
Well, exactly. Because the commitment is the price of the fee.
I'm only going to use the internet for the next month, so I can't make that commitment.
Right. but it's in general, whichever connection route you go, right, and whichever speed you end up getting, they call that the last mile.
Right.
Problem, but it really isn't the last mile, because the last mile, the last 50 feet is into your home.
That's what matters.
Right. So once you get the product, whoever it is, into your home, now you've got to figure out how to get it around your home. And that's where we go right back to what we were talking about before.
Uh-huh.
You get a fast wireless router, maybe a couple of repeaters, or you go with Google Wi-Fi and you have a mesh network in your home.
You're golden.
And that gets everybody doing everything all over the place. Back in the day when everything was wired and very few products had a wireless connection, that was hard.
Mm-hmm.
Wiring your house was hard.
Especially in some of these older homes.
Exactly. But now, as long as you can get a wireless signal around, you can do what you got to do.
Yep. You're golden.
And it's, I think, a much better deal for everybody. And particularly when you have 2.5 and 5 gigahertz routers, I have most of my systems on 5 gigahertz.
Uh-huh.
Because
faster, but not as necessarily as much range.
Well, exactly. So upstairs, everything's on the same floor that the router's on, everything's on 5 gigahertz.
Right.
And downstairs, it depends on what room they're in.
Yeah.
Right? And what that means, of course, is that many devices run at 2.4 gigahertz, so they interfere.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and the folks on the phone. Please hold on. We'll be right back to you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites. It is the truly great and truly grateful member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Ed from Henrietta, New York on the line. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. I wanted to ask you a question about a mobile cell phone, if I could. I know this is a computer show, but this is kind of related, I think.
Sure.
I got a Samsung, and it's a Chrome. I talked to Samsung. They didn't know I talked to Chrome or to Google for about half an hour. They don't know. My question is, when you pull up a site, say like you're on, I don't know, JCPenney's or whatever, shopping around, will give you the www, that site. Just to the right of that, there's a small little white box. Sometimes there's a D in there, like D dog. And just to the right of that are the three vertical buttons that'll give you, you know, your drop down menu, you want to do something else. I can't find out who can define for me what it actually is for, that little white box in there. Because when you push on it, some bizarre things happen. It'll shrink the window down. It'll show you like a bunch of files with an X in the upper top. If you want to, I assume by finger, just push on the X and it'll disappear. And in the upper left, there's, you push on like a white cross and then the window comes back again. But sometimes it'll do some bizarre stuff. I didn't want to screw around with the phone and ruin something. Do you have any idea what that little box is for?
Is that how you do multiple tabs, Nick?
Yeah. You're talking about it's up in the upper right-hand corner?
Right, it's right.
Yeah, what that little square box with the number in it, that's right. The number of tabs. If you tap on that, it will show you the number of tabs that you have open.
We might need to go back a bit and talk about what a tab is and why you
don't
use it.
Now, if I'm opening, like right now, I'm looking at mine. I've got the Google Pixel XL. And right now, my little up in that little box, it says 3. Now, if I tap on that 3, it opens it up, and it shows me that I have 3 various windows opened up. And I could select any one of them.
Do you know how on your desktop Chrome, You can have multiple tabs. Ed?
Right, yeah. Sometimes I have a lot of them. I guess I got more stuff open than that. Because sometimes I'll just start, I want to clear the browser, and sometimes I'll clear it, or clear everything, clear the history, I should say. And sometimes it'll get all of it, but sometimes it won't. So I go back and do it again and again, and you'll just get like a loop.
And all right, stop, Ed, stop, 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 Ed, stop. You're conflating two entirely different things.
He's not listening yet.
He's not listening. I'll have to wait until he stops talking because he's not in the right place at all. Ed, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Okay, here's the thing. You're conflating two different things. The history of the system and the open tabs are two entirely different things. The way the Chrome browser works, every time you go somewhere, it opens up a new tab. So that little box with a number in it is the number of open websites you currently have.
I got you.
So if you click on that, you should see a kind of a, like fanning out a deck of cards.
Yep.
Exactly. Yep.
And exactly. Each of those has a little X in the corner.
Right.
If you hit the X, it closes that
particular tab.
And again, you can kind of roll them up and down and see all the ones that are up there and close the ones you don't want.
Okay, it's like the header then on a computer desktop where you can go up and click the thing and it'll disappear.
Exactly.
Yes.
I see. I got you. Then how do you get the window back again? Go clicking up in the upper left?
Well, if you click on the in the middle of any one of those cards...
It opens it up.
It opens it up to the full screen.
It back up again. Okay, so if you want to... What's the quickest way, however, to clear the history? Just tell it to, you know, clear the... And it should clear everything, correct? Or you have to do that more than once?
Well, you click on each of those X's and they go away.
Yeah, and then it'll put a an X up or a plus sign up in the upper left-hand corner. You can click on that and then open up a new page.
I got you. Okay, I didn't want to screw around with it and lose everything.
Not an issue. You're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. You can also see if you, in the upper right-hand corner, those three little dots.
Right.
Those are a menu, so if you click on that, you can open up a new tab or whatever. There's all kinds of things there.
Great. Okay. Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's tough. The interfaces on phones, they rely on buttons that on your computer you can hold the mouse pointer over it and get a little tooltip or it will describe what the button's for. And if you try and click on something, there's often a go back or an undo command. But in these touch-based interfaces, there's no such thing as a rollover, you know, where you can get that tooltip for
right.
a particular button. And you're really not sure what to do.
Yep.
Discoverability.
Right. The problem is, you know, we've created all these things that work on desktops.
Sure.
And laptops and that. But when you come to the...
We call them the WIMPy interface, the Windows icons, mice, and pointers.
Right. They all work fine, but we're still learning what the paradigms are for touch.
Right.
And phones and tablets and watches and, you know, whatever. We're still learning about those, and they keep changing until people get what it is those things do, and we better standardize them. You know, we standardized on the hamburger menu, which is the three dashes. Now
the fact that we have to call it that still drives me crazy.
Right.
And you know what, my kids, I said, oh yeah, kids, oh how do I do blah blah blah? Oh, you click on the hamburger menu, they all stopped. They looked at me like I had two heads. Hamburger menu, what are you talking about? And I went over the screen, I pointed at it, and I said, Dad, that's not the hamburger menu. And I said, oh, well, okay, what do you call it? Dad, at school, we call that's the hot dogs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, fine, hot dogs. Hot dogs it is. Let's go. So you
but
click
now,
on the hot dogs.
Right, but now they're changing it into three dots.
Right.
So what is that, the vertical ellipsis?
It's M&M's.
The stop sign?
It's brought to you by Skittles.
Right.
It's selling off the rights, I'm sure. It's all Junior Mints. That's what it's got to be.
Junior Mints, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dave?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a kind of a two-part question. I don't know if you can help explain it to me because sure. I've been trying to get this to work for about 6 months now, and I just can't figure it out. I've been Googling everywhere, and it seems like a very simple answer to a question that I just can't get the answer to. And what it is I use Sprint. I'm out in the country. I have no Roadrunner. I'm sure that I could probably, if there's still dial-up, I would imagine I could find that somewhere. But the only internet access I have is a broadband card with Sprint.
Right.
Recently, they, for some reason, inadvertently disconnected my broadband card, and they won't reactivate it because I was grandfathered in on the older devices with their limited contract. So what I did was I took my normal cell phone, and I'm USB tethering it to my Asus router.
Right.
Now, for some reason, I can't figure out the port forwarding app that I have on my phone. Doesn't, even though it's got, like, it's you can set it up with the
DNS, sure.
Yeah. I can't seem to find my public IP, because when I go to, obviously when I go to my IP, it tells you your IP, but then when I try to port forward to a website that's installed on my main computer, I can't get it to connect. And I was told, and a couple of different guys told me, you'll never be able to do it because the ports aren't open. That Sprint doesn't allow those ports to be open, and it's got something to do with my IP address really isn't my private IP address. It's another address. I don't know. I just really don't understand it.
All right, you may be making this more complex than you need to. What type of phone do you have, Android or iOS?
Sorry, it's an Android phone, and I have it rooted, and it's I used to have it tethered to DDWRT router, but then I found out that the new Asus router automatically takes that tether and does whatever it does so all your computers in your home can use that one connection.
Right.
But I can't seem to port forward my public IP address so that I could port on the cell phone to my router so that I can port forward the router to my main computer. I don't understand what I'm doing wrong, if I can even do it at all, if I can have a public web server on my main computer using Sprint's tether, USB tether.
Right. Yeah, Sprint's USB tether may not, it's through your phone, they may not allow the traffic to go back out that way. But one thing to start with is, on the computer that is in front of you, try going to whatismyip.com and taking down that number.
Well, let's go a different route, though. Are all your computers wired or wireless?
They're all LAN. Wired.
Okay, it's wired. All right, yeah, so all right, that's a whole other set of stories then. All right,
I could do it fine when I had my USB broadband device. It worked great.
I'm betting there's some difference between that device and your phone.
Cell phone. It seems that I just can't get any. I can't ping anywhere. I can't do anything on 80 or 8080. The port. It's like it's shut down. Sprint won't allow me to run a web server on my computer.
Yeah, my best guess is that Sprint has probably got different rules for people who are tethering through their phone versus people who are using a wireless.
Yeah, here's the problem. Sprint doesn't allow tethering on the unlimited plan. You have to buy a tethering plan.
Okay.
And his tethering plan got cut off, I'm sure, completely accidentally. So he can't do unlimited tethering through that device anymore.
Sure.
So now he's trying to do that tethering through a device that is being actively blocked by AT&T from doing tethering.
Well, yeah, Sprint, but yes.
Sprint.
Yeah,
From doing that.
I would imagine that's probably why I can't find a step-by-step, like XDA developers or somewhere out there. Somebody has a step-by-step how to do this, and I can't find it, so it must be the reason why it's not possible.
That would be my best guess, is right. that they're actively trying to limit the types of data that are going across the network from phones.
I suspect you could do it if you had wireless, because there are programs that do it.
Sure.
And they would avoid all the AT&T stuff. Right. But he's trying to connect to his router tether the phone physically to the router, and the only program that does that is being actively blocked by Sprint.
Do you think if I was to get subscribe to a VPN service, that they would be able to give me an IP that I could do that with, or no?
Well, it's I don't think it's at the IP level. It's before you even get to the IP level.
Okay.
What's happening is that the product you're using to tether your phone is saying is talking to Sprint because it's a Sprint product. And right. saying, what type of connection does this guy have? Oh, he's got unlimited? Well, then we're not tethering.
Well, no, you're not misunderstanding me, are you? I can do all the tethering fine. Everything works fine. Of course, my phone is rooted, so I don't need a plan or anything for that. Everything works great. I just can't get the port forward into work because there's an app. That
you I see what you're saying. All right, so here's the deal. Generally speaking, when you're tethering, you actually have two IP addresses. There's the, because the tethering device really faces both the network on the outside, the Sprint network out into the internet, and it faces your intranet on the inside.
Yeah, he's got that connected with a cable to his Asus router.
Right, but so if things connecting into the Asus router should work, things connecting from the phone should work to the outside world. The problem is connecting that Asus router to the phone. Right?
I don't think so. I think he's able to surf from the inside.
I don't know if we're on the same page because I'm trying to use, from what I gather, I have to port forward the device to the router, not the router to the computers.
But you have to do... Okay, here's the thing. You have...
Because there's an app that you can get. There's port forwarding apps for the phone that will port forward that.
I understand
that.
The
device that you need or whatever address that you want it port forwarded to. But it just doesn't work. I just can't get it to port forward to anything.
Let me ask you some simple questions that will help me.
Okay.
Can you, from your computer... ping your Asus router?
Yes.
Okay. Can you, from the phone, ping somebody like Google or bring up a Google website?
Yes, I can do that.
Okay.
But I can't ping from the phone to my main computer. I can't ping my main computer.
No, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go to your computer. I want to go to the router. Can you ping the router?
Or the router. No, I
right.
can't ping
That's,
the router either.
Right. So here's the deal. Your router and your internal network are talking to each other fine. Your phone and the internet are talking to each other fine. What's actually not talking to each other is the router and the phone.
Right. When I put in the router's address in the phone's port forwarding app, it goes nowhere. And there's two options that I can port forward, the local IP and the public IP.
And what
I don't understand is obviously I want to forward the public IP, but it just doesn't work.
Well, you don't know what the public IP is for your router. Because don't forget, you have two IP addresses in your router. Stay on the line. We have to take a break. Stay on the line, and we'll see if we can get this conveyed without a picture. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, Dave from Rochester, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I am Dennis Worcester.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we have Dave from Rochester, New York, on the line. Dave.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I heard you discussing that problem in the background.
Yeah. So I think Dennis and I have come to a disagreement.
A friendly one.
A friendly one. So do you have a server in your network that you're trying to serve stuff to, or are you just a regular computer trying to get stuff?
No, I have an HTML server.
that I have my private web server on, and I had running fine until Sprint disconnected my USB device, and now I have no internet connection except my USB tethered.
All right. So can you do standard connectivity? So can you get from your computer to Google through your router and through the phone?
Yeah, everything is fantastic. I've got excellent connections. I've got everything is gatewayed on my it's using the same gateway that I use on my cell phone, and it's the same forgive me, but there's the I'm trying to think of the other term that I'm I just lost my brain. I know you guys might have done it once in your life.
Yeah, I've been there.
What am I trying to think of?
All right,
what I'm trying to do, guys, is just port forward to find out if the port forwarding app on my phone is only used for like a Wi-Fi connection where I can port forward a Wi-Fi connection, or can I actually use it to port forward my public IP that the phone uses? And I just can't figure that out.
Well, port is a port is a port, so it shouldn't matter. But you're right. On the phone, it may be an issue.
Yeah.
So if you're just doing standard web browsing, getting your mail, yada yada yada, that all works fine.
Yes.
What you can't do is the port forward of port 80 to your local machine.
Yeah.
But
right. I'm using the DNS service, the no IP. I forget, what is it? I haven't used typed it in so long. It's all on my computer.
Right. But, right.
Where you get an IP address that no matter if you're dynamically Your IP is changing on your computer all the time.
Yep.
But if you subscribe to this company, you have a permanent one, and you just have an updater on your computer. Well, I have the same thing on my phone. It'll update the DNS service and tell it the new IP address, but I can't port for. I type in that address and it goes nowhere. And even if I try to set up a web server on my phone to use that public IP. It won't even connect to the phone. It's like
So what it sounds like is that. Go ahead.
Sprint is probably blocking it.
Sprint is blocking it
with a phone.
If you guys didn't have a magic answer, that can be the only.
No, it clearly sounds like Sprint is blocking that.
Yeah.
That's my best guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you think, Dave?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that's right from the beginning when you first started this. But I figured maybe you guys had something else.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think he's just they're blocking him. They, you know, he ain't getting anything for free.
Sure.
Do you guys know anything about what an HA secret is? When you're trying to configure these modems, you can go into the modem and it brings up an HA secret and a triple A secret.
Yeah,
those
Google
are all. I don't have an answer for that. We've got other callers waiting.
Oh no! I was just going to ask if Sprint why they won't give me that information for my own device.
Because they consider it proprietary, and they would expect you to pay a significant amount of money for it.
Yeah, Google could be your friend for that.
Well, you guys, I appreciate your help.
Sorry.
Have a wonderful holiday.
Okay, thank you very much.
You too. Sorry, we do have other callers waiting on the line, and
we do want to make sure
we need to at least get one more out of them.
That's right.
That it does sound like the issue here.
Yeah, here in the studio, we've sketched it out on paper. We've looked at it. We've been stroking our beards and coming up with a reasonable answer. And is this what he meant? Is this what he meant? What if we do this? All right, but what about that? Okay, and then we sketched it all out and said, I think this is about as close as we're going to get.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
Chickamauga, New York.
There you go. I'm going to be out your way this afternoon. What's up, Joe?
Well, I could suggest to this guy to go into the Google App Store and get himself the Hurricane Electric network tools.
Okay.
What he will find there is a whole bunch of diagnostic. I mean, it'll do ping. It'll do trace route. One of the most important things it'll show him is what his addresses are, not only his MAC addresses, but his IP addresses. Now, think of this. Suppose he has one of those RFC 1918 addresses, 10 dot something or 192 dot something.
Which is not a routable address.
Right. It'll be NATed at Sprint, and there's just no way he's going to get back in through one of that, because Sprint's NAT is going to say, incoming connection for, okay, it's everybody's NAT address. Where do we stick this? It has no idea where to send
right,
the packet.
Right, right, right.
Sure,
right
it's
right,
all
right.
Private.
Right. Any 192.168 address or any 10.anything address is what's called non-routable. And what that basically means, it's the hint is in the label,
here.
It's not routable.
That's right.
Well, one thing I can suggest for this guy is to look into IP version 6 because it gets around all that NAT stuff. Still, Sprint may decide port 80, even if it's IP version 6, may not get through. But also, thing to try, maybe they're not handling port 443. Of course, he'd have to set up encryption for it, but that's another possibility. Or, you know, operate it on some other port. Maybe they're not blocking some other port. And then,
or
of course, this is
go to some place like Bluehost, spend the $8 a month, and get a public server.
Yeah. Your visitors
Will
thank you.
That's really the best thing because, you know, his home is, it could go down at any time.
Right.
Whereas places hosting places like that, yeah, their job is to keep your server running.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I think that's probably the easiest way to do it. You also get a lot better performance for anybody who's visiting your site, too. You're not being pushed out over a cell connection.
Soundbites is hosted at Bluehost, and so far, they've been phenomenal.
Good.
If you really want to get into Linux, too, there's always Linode, too. That is an excellent service that I really like.
Yeah, I've looked at Linode, and I haven't gotten off of Bluehost yet, although I can do pretty much everything at Bluehost because I can do command line. I can do, you know, whatever I want to do at Bluehost as well.
Oh, yeah, not to be insiders. What Linode is a bunch of Linux servers out there. They're all virtual.
Mm-hmm.
So you set up, you basically have a Linux system that's sitting there on the Internet to do whatever you want it to do.
Yep.
Cool.
I know. It's excellent. It's an excellent idea, and I've thought about it. I just haven't gotten there yet.
Right.
All right. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you, Joe. Perfect. There's lots of solutions out there for folks, and
don't make it harder than it has to be.
You know, I've thought about bringing my stuff in house myself because you know I'm on Greenlight, and so it would be super fast, but
and pretty stable.
And pretty stable, but even so, why?
Yeah,
you know, it's $8 a month. That's not a lot of money.
Sure.
To put my website up, several people have generously donated to help keep it to defray that cost. And
you've got to figure out how you want to spend your time,
right?
And if you want to learn to do that, and if you want to see what's going on, and if you're comfortable with potentially there being a mistake or two that might cause some downtime, then that's fine.
Right. And heaven knows I've set up more than my share of servers.
In the
past, I don't really need to do all that stuff all over again.
Right. Yeah, I only like to look after servers I'm getting paid to look after.
Exactly. let somebody else do the work, and for $8 a month, it's well worth it.
I mean, for the average home user, what's the compelling reason?
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
It's a hobby thing.
There's other things you can do for
right.
Everybody's got their thing.
Now, everybody's got a hobby. I get that. I used to run my own servers. I certainly ran my own servers when I was at RIT. But even so, it was not something I generally did. I had minions who did most of the actual work. I just
minions.
Sat around and
Aren't
watched.
They great?
They're the best.
We should get some more of those.
We should get more minions. All right. That music tells me you've wasted 2 hours of your life on this nonsense. And we're done. For this week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Dennis Worcester.
Anytime, Nick. Anytime,
we love to have you here. Steve Ray, clearly one step ahead of law somewhere in the Midwest. Maybe he'll be back next week. Maybe Dennis will be back next week.
We don't know
what happens.
We will see.
But don't go away because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Again, thanks to each and every one of you who was kind and generous enough to donate and let the freeloaders have a ride on your backs. We made our nut for this season, and we're delighted and thrilled. We'll see you in just 166 hours on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, and the truly great and gratefully member-supported Jazz 90.1.